Hey there, everybody. Hey there, everybody. This is Chris Vanini with Dan Kilbridge, and we're bringing to you the first edition of the Spartan Tailgate podcast. Something we're going to try out, see if you guys like it, see if you don't, try to have some fun. We're going to talk about, you know, Michigan State, Big Ten, national news, anything we kind of want to. If there's anything you want us to talk about, topics, questions, or anything, just leave them in the thread, and maybe we'll hit them. If we keep doing this. So, Dan, how you doing?
Doing well, Chris. The maiden voyage. This is exciting stuff here.
This is where the legend starts. So, first news of the night. This is Thursday night we're recording this, so you probably won't hear this till Friday. But Tyreek Thompson, linebacker, commits to Michigan State. He was a Wolverine legacy, but commits to Michigan State, something people had speculated for quite some time. Dan, what did you think about this pickup and what it means?
Well, first of all, I'd like to make it clear that I have a final editorial cut on the podcast, so if I don't like it, you won't be hearing this on Friday. I'll get it to you whenever I feel comfortable with it. But as far as Tyreek Thompson, yeah, the interesting thing here to me is that he's a Michigan legacy. I mean, his dad played at U of M, and we had a thing in Rumblings today where my coworker Sean Shear asked Jack Ebling if he could remember a U of M legacy ever picking Michigan State. Jack certainly couldn't, and I can't. We're both a little younger than Jack by a year or maybe a decade or two or three. But, Tyreek, first of all, the thing that jumps out at me is like he's a great student, that comes across when you talk to him. Big-time linebacker prospect, and I think with all the national guys Michigan State has gotten recently, this would be a big score in state and really one that's going to help this class quite a bit, which now looking at it, kind of taking a step back, it's a really strong class, all things considered.
Yeah, and it stretches, you know, nationally, national recruiting and whatnot. You got guys from Texas, Virginia, all over the place, and it seems like that's where MSU is getting the biggest Rose Bowl bump is in its national reputation. They've done pretty well in state, but maybe not as well as some people might have predicted. But nationally, you're seeing them beat out top programs for guys from Texas, and that's something you've not really seen from MSU very much at all. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, they're finally on the national radar, I guess, and I've said this before. I think what put them there, not so much the Rose Bowl, I think it was the win over Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. That's the game that a lot of these kids mention, and you look at what they did. I mean, Urban Meyer, Ohio State, those are both national brands, and Michigan State maybe hadn't taken that step yet. To beat them the way they did, the big Denikos Allen stop and then the Jamie Langford run to seal it. It was a great game, and I think that's what really most kids remember about this season. Yes, the win over Stanford and the Rose Bowl, that was something for the fans that they hadn't seen in a long time, and it was really good. But, you know, to kind of put in perspective what they've been doing here, I think that game allowed them to get in with some more national kids. You see the two guys from Texas, and now it's kind of like, oh, hey, Michigan State, they're actually a relevant football program, even in some southern states, and that just hasn't been the case at all over the past couple of decades.
The class is currently at 13, class of 2015. What are you figuring it's going to end up about? How many spots do you think are about open?
Yeah, I mean, right now you look at 17, 18, 19. It's kind of hard to say. You don't know who's going to get hurt, who's not coming back. There's so many things can happen. But, yeah, around there, and it's filling up fast. So now they have the luxury of being able to be a little bit more selective, I think, when they do that. So that helps.
It might be just me, but to have a class, you know, pretty close to being full before the season even starts, that's not something – the staff does very often. You know, they like to get a lot of those guys who maybe shine as a senior that weren't seen. Have you gotten that vibe on how quick this class has come together?
Yes, this is usually prime panic time for the Michigan State recruiting nuts. It seems like every August we hear, well, where are the commits? What's going on? We've only got 9-10 kids, and people are freaking out about it. They've done okay with that approach, but, yeah, I guess it doesn't seem to be the case anymore. I mean, I think Michigan State is now a destination for some of these kids, and they don't really need to wait out for some of those four stars that maybe are going to wait till the end of the year, and they don't necessarily need to wait for the senior film on a lot of these guys because they're in on a type of prospect that's good enough as a junior to get an offer.
Yeah, so recruiting's been going pretty well recently for the Spartans last year.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. It seems like the past 30 days, I mean, it's crazy. You think about it. They've gotten, in the past 30 days, three kids with Alabama and Ohio State offers. That just kind of makes you go, what?
Yeah, and what constitutes an Alabama offer might be up in the air, but the fact that Alabama is interested in a kid, it still makes that kind of statement for what MSU is getting. Moving on to the current team, we had a media day on Monday, and practice. You were at practice on Wednesday. What was your kind of big picture vibe you got from D'Antonio and the players from media day on kind of how they're handling these expectations?
You know, everyone was very forthcoming at media day about the fact that they're excited. You know, there was certainly no holding back in terms of expectations. I think all these guys kind of know that they think they have something special going right now, and they're going to do everything they can to keep it going in 2014. A lot of guys were loose. I think the coaches are loose. I mean, I remember, you know, I'm sitting at Terrence Samuel's table, and mind you, Terrence Samuel was public enemy number one going into last season. And understandably so, his receivers were terrible in 2000.
Even early in the season.
Sure, and then they went from pretty bad to serviceable later in non-conference to, wow, they might really have something. And that continued to sort of go into late into Big Ten play, into the postseason. And now it's not so much, Terry, why can't your guys catch? It's, Terrence, you know, who's going to be the group of six guys that are playing? Because you've got nine receivers you can choose from. So the tables are totally turned for a guy like that. So certainly he's going to be a little happier at media day, a little more open about things. There's just no hostility in that room, and there was that a year ago after the year they had in 2012. It's almost as if when you're talking to those guys after a bad season, they're trying to figure out where you're coming from and what negative story you're trying to write, and they're a little guarded, whereas now, hey, things are going pretty well. There's not much you can nitpick on this team, and they're happy to tell us about it.
I've always gotten the impression that D'Antonio has always been, I don't know, prophetic, but he always seemed to have a good feel for his team heading into the season. I remember coming off of the 2009 deal, the Rather Hall situation, the 6-7 season, and he came across as a guy who was very confident in the leadership on the team and what they could do when not many people were, and they go out and, you know, when they win the Big Ten championship. And heading into 2012, he very much questioned where that leadership was going to come from with Kirk gone, and it turned out to be an issue. So he seemed like a guy who was very confident but was very much fighting against looking ahead, because this team has talked about a national championship before, and when they have, they've come up very well short usually, thinking about like 2012. So he was a guy who, again, was coming across pretty confident, but also, you know, wary. Someone several times over the past few weeks, they've called Michigan State moving from the hunter to the hunted, and D'Antonio will quickly interrupt and say, well, one of the hunted.
Can't have any big headlines out of media day saying that Mark D'Antonio thinks they're the only hunted program in the country.
They're always looking for that chip on the shoulder. I remember at Big Ten media day, Shalee Calhoun pointed out Ohio State being picked by the media to win. So they'll look for everything they can. It might be harder to find that these days, but they're still looking for it. So as we move into, we're going to kind of overview the each side of the ball, or all, maybe all three sides of the ball here. Start off on offense, quarterback. You know, you look at where this was a year ago. You didn't know, you know, what the hell was going to happen. Cook was, in some people's eyes, maybe the fourth guy, the third guy. Now he comes in, he's got, I think, 40-1 odds for the Heisman, which is 17th best in the country. It's been an amazing turnaround for him. And he's not much of the question mark. I mean, he obviously needs to improve. He, you know, he's worked out with George Whitfield. He's working on his footwork. But he's got the arm. He's got the confidence to be able to do it. Dave Warner said he'll probably have more freedom at the line of scrimmage to make adjustments. That seemed to be a problem at times last year. They burned timeouts as Cook is getting to the huddle. So that's something I'm sure they'll have to shore up. But looking at the backups, it's looking like Tyler O'Connor is going to be the number two. I know Damian Terry is still dealing with some injury stuff. Is that the vibe you're getting?
Yeah, and going back to your statement about what the hell was going on with Connor Cook, are we allowed to curse on this podcast?
I got no problem with it.
You got no problem? Okay. Well, we'll make sure it's really good, and then, you know, we don't want to get too crazy, and we'll draw up a set of rules or ethics or something as we go forth here. Because, again, we don't really know what this podcast is, what it will be. We're just kind of shooting from the hip here, but I think, yeah, in terms of Connor Cook and his backup, I do think Tyler O'Connor is and will be the backup going into, say, Big Ten play against Nebraska. I think that extra year of the program is big when you look at his knowledge of the scheme compared to Damian Terry, a guy who came in a year ago and now has missed some time due to injury. I think he's all right. There, it just sounds to me like D'Antonio wants to hold him out of the scrimmages until he's fully healthy. He had that injury to his non-throwing shoulder. So it sounded like maybe they'd sit him out the first two scrimmages and then let him loose for the third scrimmage. And I wrote about this this week over at SpartanTailgate.com.
Check it out.
There you go. We're getting the plugs in early. There's our first of many. But, yeah, I think that, okay, in terms of the worst-case scenario, true backup quarterback, let's say Connor Cook gets hurt, I think Tyler O'Connor is the number two quarterback in that sense, and he goes in and he becomes the guy if Cook should go down. I do think that Damian Terry has a unique skill set, that one that Michigan State hasn't seen in a while at the quarterback position. And if they want to add a change of pace guy to the offense, even for a series or two, at the very least you're making your opponents prepare for it. You could show some read option with Terry against Jacksonville State, whoever it may be, not go back to it for 4 or 5 weeks, but those coaches are in the film room going, well, they've shown us with Terry, we got to prepare for it. And they're wasting time on that. So either way, I think that Terry could bring something this year. We all remember Michigan State tried some things in 2012 when the offense was really struggling. They tried to get Connor Cook on some read option stuff. Didn't exactly work out as planned, and they kind of abandoned it. But, no, I do think Michigan State could use Damian Terry a little bit this year. And maybe, hey, we saw what he can do in the green and white game. Maybe the guy's a star and he's just too good to keep off the field and you got to play him some. But in terms of the true backup, I think right now it's Tyler O'Connor.
Yeah, I was very surprised that they were willing to break out that play with Terry on the first play of the spring game or first-ish play.
I think coaches are already preparing for that. You know what I mean? It's on Big Ten Network now, and so mm-hmm. Brady Hoke's going, oh, geez, we got to worry about this now. And that was not my best Brady Hoke impression, but we'll do that.
Yeah, it's always a balance, you know. Do you hide things or do you give them extra things to study? You hear coaches say both. I'm sure it's a mix of everything in there. I do think we'll see Terry in some interesting situations. Different type of player, but I also think about Keyshawn Martin in 2008 when he was used for throwbacks and stuff like that. So if they have a player that they think can make a play, they'll do so. Even R.J. Shelton's pass at Notre Dame last year, even though that didn't work, they're willing to try stuff like that. So I do think we'll see him in some interesting situations. Moving to the running back, It seemed pretty clear from the coaches that they don't want Jeremy Langford getting the load like he did a year ago. They need some players to lighten his load a bit. Delton Williams was a guy who did last year who did pretty well, I thought, until he got hurt late in the year. Dave Warner says that Delton Williams is sticking at running back for time being. He's only working out there, so at least for the short-term future, that appears to be a spot. But you also got Nick Hill. Madre London's reportedly looking pretty good. What do you think about the options outside of Langford there?
Williams is an interesting guy because, like you said, he came in, he had the big run at Illinois kind of in garbage time there, showed some glimpses. And he's not a name I heard all that often this offseason when we talk about these things. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Gerald Holmes is probably a name I've heard more than Delton Williams, which is weird because Williams showed that he can play at this level, and Holmes is a redshirt freshman coming in, granted with a lot of hype, and I think he can do the job, but you don't want to forget about Williams there that, hey, I know he's not this is what bothers me about recruiting is that everyone forgets about Williams all of a sudden now that he's a sophomore, and it's, well, what's Madre Lone going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, no, he's, Williams is a very solid tailback. He can do the job. We can't forget about him. And I think Nick Hill, I like the guy. Seems like a great teammate. And I think he's got he brings something to the table. I just don't know that something fits in with Michigan State's offense right now, primarily because, and this isn't something that's been talked about a lot, but the guy's no good in pass protection right now.
Yeah.
And that's because of his size, you know, and it's just something he hasn't gotten that much better at.
And that's where Langford was surprisingly really good.
Yes.
For a guy who was considered to be a burner who played cornerback, that guy, I think it was Iowa. I know he had a huge block to set up a touchdown pass. That was a really underrated skill of his, and that's one reason why I think he will get looks at the NFL because we know he can run, but if you can pass protect, that's huge.
Yeah, and that's a man's job. I mean, you're giving up usually 30-40 pounds to hold your ground. You know, you don't have to beat him. You just can't get driven 3 yards back. And I think that's been Hill's biggest shortcoming throughout his career. I remember covering him in high school and thinking he had a really good shot to make an impact just because he was so fast and really hit the holes hard, but he just hasn't figured out the pass protection, so you can't really put him in there and feel good about it in pass pro and things like that. So he's probably not going to be that number two guy. I'm really looking at Williams, Holmes, and London, like you mentioned. I mean, he's a true freshman. The thing to me is he has to be much, much better than either Delton Williams or Gerald Holmes to see the field, in my opinion. Because
that's why I was surprised.
It's not like he has this crazy unique skill set that's different than those guys. I mean, he's sort of an all-around tailback. He's a good pass catcher, decent blocker. But in order to prove that you want to take that red shirt off, he's got to be much, much better than those guys in camp. And I don't know if he's going to be able to do it.
That's why I was surprised that Devin Williams didn't get that shirt. He obviously impressed them. That's why I brought up the staying running back because we had him. Moving to receivers, you are we getting audio back? Are you catching requests?
I sound okay. I don't know. This probably sounds horrible. I'm sure we'll have to erase the whole thing.
You've been a little fuzzy sometimes on my end.
Okay.
I'm hearing myself coming through you.
I think I'm all right. I don't know. Keep rolling here, I guess, and figure it out as we go.
All right. So receivers. You were talking about them a little earlier. Seems like are the top two guys. What do you see in the rest of it?
Well, I mean, you see number one, McGarrett Kings is the guy who did it last year, and he's the starter on the depth chart if he doesn't get in trouble this spring. So I think, you know, he's definitely the number three guy right now, and that's kind of their top three. But Aaron Burbridge, man, he was so good as a freshman in that Indiana game. And I just remember thinking, man, they've got possibly a three-year guy on their hands. I mean, that's how good he looked in his first college action. Now looking back at it, maybe expectations were a little too high, but really struggled as a sophomore. And I think it was an attitude thing. Terrence Samuel and I talked about that a little bit at Media Day. I think he thought he was good enough to get by on pure talent alone. And some guys are. But I don't think Burbridge was quite there yet. And so what he's had to do this offseason is really dedicate himself and really break into the playbook and learn that the smallest things at the college level can make a difference between an incompletion and a 25-yard touchdown pass. I mean, all it takes is one misstep either way. So I expect, you know, if what Samuel said is correct and that he has invested himself fully, then I think he's going to be a great talent and could possibly even overtake a guy like Mumphrey at some point in time. The guy I'm also really looking at is A.J. Troop. And I know that he's not a huge name outside of the Scandalera Center, but, man, I heard a lot about him a couple of years ago before he got hurt. He looked really good in that 2013 spring game, and then, you know, he has to miss the entire season. But he's a big body guy, and I think he could be a big surprise player this year.
Yeah, looking at Okay, I'm hearing myself on your computer. So what I'm going to say is maybe cover up your speakers.
So don't
I'm like hearing myself.
Are you able to edit this?
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
I don't want it to be doubled up here. It might just be an internet issue.
Yeah.
It's like a couple second delay.
Well, it's all a work in progress here.
Yeah, this is why.
I don't even know where my speakers are on this computer, to be honest with you.
Oh, right. Back there.
In the back?
Yeah.
Where do I put my Michigan State media guide right underneath it? Would that help?
No, it's still I guess moving forward, if you could get those headphones that have a mic on them,
yeah,
probably the best way to solve this.
Okay, like we're flying a helicopter or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, it doesn't have to be like a headphone. You can get like a... They just got a little mic on the string of this from there.
Sure.
So, okay. I'm going to stop this right now. And try to pick this up. So maybe we can do that.